and another following behind. His own task was to tend the brazier and make certain that the fire did not go out.
"This is no common fog, Hugo Hill," Ysilla insisted. "It stinks of sorcery, as you would know if you had a nose to smell it. Many a voyager has been lost here, pole boats and pirates and great river galleys too. They wander forlorn through the mist, searching for a sun they cannot find until madness or hunger claim their lives. There are restless spirits in the air here, and tormented souls below the water."
"There's one now," said Tyrion. Off to starboard, a hand large enough to crush the boat was reaching up from the murky depths. Only the tops of two fingers broke the river's surface, but as the shy maid eased on past, he could see the rest of the hand rippling below the water and a pale face looking up. Though his tone was light, he was uneasy. This was a bad place, rank with despair and death.
"Ysilla is not wrong. This fog is not natural."
Something foul grew in the waters here and festered in the air. Small wonder the stone men go mad.
"You should not make mock," warned Ysilla. "The whispering dead hate the warm and quick and ever seek for more damned souls to join them."
"I doubt they have a shroud my size." The dwarf stirred the coals with a poker. "Hatred does not stir the stone men half so much as hunger." Holden Halfmaester had wrapped a yellow scarf around his mouth and nose, muffling his voice.
"Nothing any sane man would want to eat grows in these fogs. Thrice each year the triarchs of Valentus send a galley upriver with provisions. But the Mersey ships are oft late, and sometimes bring more mouths than food."
Young Griff said,
"There must be fish in the river." "I would not eat any fish taken from these waters," said Ysilla. "I would not."
"We do well not to breathe the fog either," said Holden. "Garin's curse is all about us." "The only way not to breathe the fog is not to breathe."
"Garin's curse is only grayscale," said Tyrion.
The curse was oft seen in children, especially in damp cold climes. The afflicted flesh stiffened, calcified, and cracked, though the dwarf had read that grayscale's progress could be stayed by limes, mustard poultices, and scalding hot bars, the maester said, or by prayer, sacrifice, and fasting, the septons insisted. Then the disease passed, leaving its young victims disfigured but alive. Maesters and septons alike agreed that children marked by grayscale could never be touched by the rarer mortal form of the affliction, nor by its terrible swift cousin, the grey plague.
"Damp is said to be the culprit," he said. "Foul humours in the air, not curses." "The conquerors did not believe either, Hugo Hill," said Ysilla. "The men of Volantis and Valeria hung Garin in a golden cage and made mock as he called upon his mother to destroy them. But in the night the waters rose and drowned them, and from that day to this they have not rested. They are down there, still beneath the water. They who were once the lords of fire, their cold breath rises from the murk to make these fogs, and their flesh has turned as stony as their hearts."
The stump of Tyrion's nose was itching fiercely. He gave it a scratch. "The old woman may be right. This place is no good. I feel as if I am back in the privy again, watching my father die." He would go mad as well if he had to spend his days in this grey soup, whilst his flesh and bones turned to stone. Young Griff did not seem to share his misgivings.
"Let them try and trouble us. We'll show them what we're made of."
"We are made of blood and bone, in the image of the father and the mother," said Septon Lamour. "Make no vainglorious boasts, I beg you. Pride is a grievous sin. The stone men were proud as well, and the shrouded lord was proudest of them all."
The heat from the glowing coals brought a flush to Tyrion's face.
"Is there a shrouded lord?" or is he just some tale?
The Shrouded Lord has ruled these mists since Garin's day, said Yandri. Some say that he himself is Garin, risen from his watery grave.
The dead do not rise, insisted Halden Halfmaster, and no man lives 1,000 years.
Yes, there is a Shrouded Lord. There have been a score of them. When one dies, another takes his place. This one is a corsair from the Basilisk Islands, who believed the Roin would offer richer pickings than the summer sea.
Aye, I've heard that too, said Duck. But there's another tale I like better. The one that says he's not like to the stone men, that he started as a statue till a grey woman came out of the fog and kissed him with lips as cold as ice.
Enough, said Griff. Be quiet, all of you.
Septa L'Amour sucked in her breath. What was that?
Where? Tyrion saw nothing but the fog. The heat from the glowing coals brought a flush to his face.
Something moved. I saw the water rippling.
A turtle, the prince announced cheerfully. A big snapper, that's all it was.
He thrust his pole out ahead of them and pushed them away from a towering green obelisk. The fog clung to them, damp and chilly. A sunken temple loomed up out of the greyness as Yandri and Duck leaned upon their poles and paced slowly from prow to stern, pushing. They passed a marble stair that spiraled up from the mud and ended jaggedly in air. Beyond, half seen, were other shapes, shattered spires, headless statues, trees with roots bigger than their boat.
This was the most beautiful city on the river, and the richest, said Yandri. Croyane, the festival city.
Too rich, thought Tyrion.
Too beautiful.
It is never wise to tempt the dragons. The drowned city was all around them. A half-seen shape flapped by overhead, pale leathery wings beating at the fog. The dwarf craned his head around to get a better look, but the thing was gone as suddenly as it had appeared. Not long after, another light floated into view.
Boat!
A voice called across the water, faintly. Who are you?
Shy maid, Yantri shouted back. Kingfisher, up or down?
Down.
Hides and honey, ale and tallow.
Up, knives and needles, lace and linen. Spice wine.
What word from old Valantis? Yantri called.
War,
the word came back.
Where? Griff shouted. When?
When the year turns, came the answer.
Nisus and Malachor go hand in hand, and the elephants show stripes.
The voice faded as the other boat moved away from them. They watched its light dwindle and disappear.
"Is it wise to shout through the fog at boats we cannot see?" asked Tyrion. "What if they were pirates?"
They had been fortunate where pirates were concerned, slipping down Dagger Lake by night, unseen and unmolested. Once Duck had caught a glimpse of a hull that he insisted belonged to Euro, the Unwashed. The Shy Maid had been upwind, however, and Euro, if Euro it had been, had shown no interest in them.
The pirates will not sail into the Sorrows, said Yandri.
Elephants with stripes, Griff muttered. What is that about, Nisus and Malachor?
Illyrio has paid Triarch Nisus enough to own him 8 times over.
In gold or cheese, quipped Tyrion.
Griff rounded on him.
Unless you can cut this fog with your next witticism, keep it to yourself.
Yes, father, the dwarf almost said. I'll be quiet, thank you. He did not know these volunteers, yet it seemed to him that elephants and tigers might have good reason to make common cause when faced with dragons.
Might be the cheesemonger has misjudged the situation. You can buy a man with gold, but only blood and steel will keep him true.
The little man stirred the coals again and blew on them to make them burn brighter.
I hate this. I hate this fog, I hate this place, and I am less than fond of Griff.
Tyrion still had the poison mushrooms he had plucked from the grounds of Illyrio's manse, and there were days when he was sore tempted to slip them into Griff's supper. The trouble was, Griff scarce seemed to eat. Duck and Yandry pushed against the poles. Ysilla turned the tiller. Young Griff pushed the shy maid away from a broken tower, whose windows stared down like blind black eyes. Overhead, her sail hung limp and heavy. The water deepened under her hull until their poles could not touch bottom, but still the current pushed them downstream, until all Tyrion could see was something massive rising from the river, humped and ominous. He took it for a hill looming above a wooded island or some colossal rock overgrown with moss and ferns and hidden by the fog. As the shy mare drew nearer, though, the shape of it came clearer. A wooden keep could be seen beside the water, rotted and overgrown. Slender spires took form above it. Some of them snapped off like broken spears. Roofless towers appeared and disappeared, thrusting blindly upward. Halls and galleries drifted past, graceful buttresses, delicate arches, fluted columns, terraces and bowers. All ruined, all desolate, all fallen. The grey moss grew thickly here, covering the fallen stones in great mounds and bearding all the towers. Black vines crept in and out of windows, through doors and over archways, up the sides of high stone walls. The fog concealed three-quarters of the palace, but what they glimpsed was more than enough for Tyrion to know that this island fastness had been 10 times the size of the Red Keep once, and 100 times more beautiful. He knew where he was. "The Palace of Love," he said softly. "That was the Roynar name," said Holden Halfmaester. "But for 1,000 years this has been the Palace of Sorrow." The ruin was sad enough, but knowing what it had been made it even sadder. There was laughter here once, Tyrion thought. There were gardens, bright with flowers, and fountains sparkling golden in the sun. These steps once rang to the sound of lovers' footsteps, and beneath that broken dome marriages beyond count were sealed with a kiss. His thoughts turned to Tysha, who had so briefly been his lady wife. It was Jamie, he thought, despairing. He was my own blood, my big, strong brother. When I was small, he brought me toys, barrel hoops and blocks, and a carved wooden lion. He gave me my first pony and taught me how to ride him. When he said that he had bought you for me, I never doubted him. Why would I? He was Jamie, and you were just some girl who played a part. I had feared it from the start, from the moment you first smiled at me and let me touch your hand. My own father could not love me. Why would you, if not for gold? Through the long grey fingers of the fog, he heard again the deep shuddering thrum of a bowstring snapping taut. The grunt Lord Tywin made as the quarrel took him beneath the belly, the slap of cheeks on stone as he sat down to die. "Wherever whores go," he said. "And where is that?" Tyrion wanted to ask him. "Where did Tysha go, father? How much more of this fog must we endure?" "Another hour should see us clear of the sorrows," said Holden Halfmaester. "From there on there should be a pleasure cruise. There's a village round every bend along the lower Roin, orchards and vineyards and fields of grain ripening in the sun, fisher folk on the water, hot bars and sweet wines. Selhoris, Valisar, and Volantheris are walled towns so large they would be cities in the Seven Kingdoms. I believe I'll—" "Light ahead," warned young Griff. Tyrion saw it too. "Kingfisher or another pearl boat," he told himself, but somehow he knew that was not right. His nose itched. He scratched at it savagely. The light grew brighter as the shy maid approached it. A soft star in the distance, it glimmered faintly through the fog, beckoning them on. Shortly it became two lights, then three, a ragged row of beacons rising from the water. "The Bridge of Dream," Griff named it. "There will be stone men on the span. Some may start to wail at our approach, but they are not like to molest us. Most stone men are feeble creatures, clumsy, lumbering, witless. Near the end, they all go mad, but that is when they are most dangerous. If need be, fend them off with the torches. On no account let them touch you."
"They may not even see us," said Holden Halfmaster. "The fog will hide us from them until we are almost at the bridge. Then we will be past before they know that we are here."
"Stone eyes are blind eyes," thought Tyrion. The mortal form of Grayscale began in the extremities, he knew. A tingling in a fingertip, a toenail turning black, a loss of feeling. As the numbness crept into the hand or stole past the foot and up the leg, the flesh stiffened and grew cold and the victim's skin took on a greyish hue, resembling stone. He'd heard it said that there were three good cures for Grayscale, axe and sword and cleaver. Hacking off afflicted parts did sometimes stop the spread of the disease, Tyrion knew, but not always. Many a man had sacrificed one arm or foot, only to find the other going grey. Once that happened, hope was gone. Blindness was common when the stone reached the face. In the final stages, the curse turned inward to muscles, bones, and inner organs. Ahead of them, the bridge grew larger. The Bridge of Dream, Griff called it, but this dream was smashed and broken. Pale stone archers marched off into the fog, reaching from the Palace of Sorrow to the river's western bank. Half of them had collapsed, pulled down by the weight of the grey moss that draped them and the thick black vines that snaked upward from the water. The broad wooden span of the bridge had rotted through, but some of the lamps that lined the way were still aglow. As the shy maid grew closer, Tyrion could see the shapes of stone men moving in the light, shuffling aimlessly around the lamps like slow grey moths. Some were naked, others clad in shrouds. Griff drew his longsword.
"Yolo, light the torches. Lad, take Lamore back to her cabin and stay with her."
Young Griff gave his father a stubborn look.
"Lamore knows where her cabin is. I want to stay."
"We are sworn to protect you," Lamore said softly.
"I don't need to be protected. I can use a sword as well as duck. I'm half a knight."
"And half a boy," said Griff. "Do as you're told, now."
The youth cursed under his breath and flung his pole down onto the deck. The sound echoed queerly in the fog, and for a moment it was as if poles were falling around them.
"Why should I run and hide? Holden is staying, and Ysilla, even you go."
"Aye," said Tyrion, "but I am small enough to hide behind a duck."
He thrust half a dozen torches into the brazier's glowing coals and watched the oiled rags flare up. "Don't stare at the fire," he told himself. The flames would leave him night-blind.
"You're a dwarf," young Griff said scornfully. "Oh, my secret is revealed," Tyrion agreed.
"Aye, I'm less than half a Holden, and no one gives a mama's fart whether I live or die, least of all me.
You, though, you are everything."
"Dwarf," said Griff, "I warned you."
A wail came shivering through the fog, faint and high. Lamore whirled, trembling.
"Seven save us all."
The broken bridge was a bare 5 yards ahead. Around its piers, the water rippled white as the foam from a madman's mouth. 40 feet above, the stone men moaned and muttered beneath a flickering lamp. Most took no more notice of the shy maid than of a drifting log. Tyrion clutched his torch tighter and found that he was holding his breath. And then they were beneath the bridge, white walls heavy with curtains of grey fungus looming to either side, water foaming angrily around them. For a moment it looked as though they might crash into the right-hand pier, but Duck raised his pole and shoved off, back into the centre of the channel, and a few heartbeats later they were clear. Tyrion had no sooner exhaled than young Griff grabbed hold of his arm.
"What do you mean? I am everything. What did you mean by that? Why am I everything?"
"Why?" said Tyrion. "If the stone men had taken Yantri, or Griff, or our lovely L'Amour, we would have grieved for them and gone on. Lose you, and this whole enterprise is undone. And all those years of feverish plotting by the cheesemonger and the eunuch would have been for naught. Isn't that so?" The boy looked to Griff.
"He knows who I am."
"Ah, if I did not know before, I would now." By then the shy maid was well downstream of the Bridge of Dream. All that remained was a dwindling light astern, and soon enough that would be gone as well.
"You're young Griff, son of Griff the Sellsword," said Tyrion. "Or perhaps you are the warrior in mortal guise.
Let me take a closer look."
He held up his torch so that the light washed over young Griff's face.
"Leave off," Griff commanded, "or you will wish you had."
The dwarf ignored him. "The blue hair makes your eyes seem blue. Oh, that's good. And the tale of how you collar it in honor of your dead Tirashi mother was so touching, it almost made me cry. Still, a curious man might wonder why some sellsword's whelp would need a soiled scepter to instruct him in the faith, or a chainless maester to tutor him in Istrian tongues, and a clever man might question why your father would engage a hedge knight to train you in arms instead of simply sending you off to apprentice with one of the free companies. It is almost as if someone wanted to keep you hidden while still preparing you for what? Now, there's a puzzlement, but I'm sure that in time it will come to me. I must admit you have noble features for a dead boy."
The boy flushed.
"I'm not dead."
"How not? My lord father wrapped your corpse in a crimson cloak and laid you down beside your sister at the foot of the Iron Throne, his gift to the new king. Those who had the stomach to lift the cloak said that half your head was gone."
The lad backed off a step, confused.
"Your father, aye.
Tywin of House Lannister. Perhaps you may have heard of him."
Young Griff hesitated.
"Lannister? Your father
is dead, at my hand. If it please your grace to call me Yellow or Hugo, so be it. But know that I was born Tyrion of House Lannister, true-born son of Tywin and Joanna, both of whom I slew. Men will tell you that I am a kingslayer, a kinslayer, and a liar, and all of that is true. But then we are a company of liars, are we not? Take your feigned father. Griff, is it?"
The dwarf sniggered.
"You should thank the gods that Varys the Spider is a part of this plot of yours. Griff would not have fooled the cockless wonder for an instant, no more than he did me. No lord, my lordship says, no knight. And I'm no dwarf. Just saying a thing does not make it true. Who better to raise Prince Rhaegar's infant son than Prince Rhaegar's dear friend, John Connington, once Lord of Griffin's Roost and Hand of the King?"
"Be quiet,"
Griff's voice was uneasy. On the larboard side of the boat, a huge stone hand was visible just below the water. Two fingers broke the surface.
"How many of those are there?" Tyrion wondered. A trickle of moisture ran down his spine and made him shudder.
The sorrows drifted by them. Peering through the mists, he glimpsed a broken spire, a headless hero, an ancient tree torn from the ground and upended, its huge roots twisting through the roof and windows of a broken dome. "Why does all of this seem so familiar?"
Straight on, a tilted stairway of pale marble rose up out of the dark water in a graceful spiral, ending abruptly 10 feet above their heads.
No, thought Tyrion, that is not possible.
Ahead, Limor's voice was shivery. A light! All of them looked. All of them saw it.
Kingfisher, said Griff. Her, or some other like her.
But he drew his sword again. No one said a word. The Shy Maid moved with the current. Her sail had not been raised since she first entered the Sorrows. She had no way to move but with the river. Duck stood squinting, clutching his pole with both hands. After a time, even Yandri stopped pushing. Every eye was on the distant light. As they grew closer, it turned into two lights, then three.
The Bridge of Dream, said Tyrion.
Inconceivable, said Holden Halfmaester. We've left the bridge behind. Rivers only run one way.
Mother Rowan runs how she will, murmured Yandri.
Seven save us, said L'Amour. Up ahead, the stone men on the span began to wail. A few were pointing down at them.
Alden, get the prince below,
commanded Griff. It was too late. The current had them in its teeth. They drifted inexorably toward the bridge. Yandri stabbed out with his pole to keep them from smashing into a pier. The thrust shoved them sideways through a curtain of pale grey moss. Tyrion felt tendrils brush against his face, soft as a whore's fingers. Then there was a crash behind him, and the deck tilted so suddenly that he almost lost his feet and went pitching over the side. A stone man crashed down into the boat. He landed on the cabin roof so heavily that the Shy Maid seemed to rock and roared a word down at them in a tongue that Tyrion did not know. A second stone man followed, landing back beside the tiller. The weathered planks splintered beneath the impact, and Ysilla let out a shriek. Duck was closest to her. The big man did not waste time reaching for his sword. Instead, he swung his pole, slamming it into the stone man's chest and knocking him off the boat into the river, where he sank at once without a sound. Griff was on the second man the instant he shambled down off the cabin roof. With a sword in his right hand and a torch in his left, he drove the creature backwards. As the current swept the Shy Maid beneath the bridge, their shifting shadows danced upon the mossy walls. When the stone man moved aft, Duck blocked his way, pole in hand. When he went forward, Holden Halfmaester waved a second torch at him and drove him back. He had no choice but to come straight at Griff. The captain slid aside, his blade flashing. A spark flew where the steel bit into the stone man's calcified grey flesh, but his arm tumbled to the deck all the same. Griff kicked the limb aside. Yandri and Duck had come up with their poles. Together they forced the creature over the side and into the black waters of the Rhoyne. By then the Shy Maid had drifted out from under the broken bridge.
"Did we get them all?" asked Duck. "How many jumped?"
"Two," said Tyrion, shivering.
"Three," said Holden. "Behind you!"
The dwarf turned, and there he stood. The leap had shattered one of his legs, and a jagged piece of pale bone jutted out through the rotted cloth of his breeches and the grey meat beneath. The broken bone was speckled with brown blood, but still he lurched forward, reaching for young Griff. His hand was grey and stiff, but blood oozed between his knuckles as he tried to close his fingers to grasp. The boy stood staring, as still as if he too were made of stone. His hand was on his sword hilt, but he seemed to have forgotten why. Tyrion kicked the lad's leg out from under him and leapt over him when he fell, thrusting his torch into the stone man's face to send him stumbling backwards on his shattered leg, flailing at the flames with stiff grey hands. The dwarf waddled after him, slashing with the torch, jabbing it at the stone man's eyes.
A little further, back, one more step, another.
They were at the edge of the deck when the creature rushed him, grabbed the torch, and ripped it from his hands.
Bugger me, thought Tyrion.
The stone man flung the torch away. There was a soft hiss as the black waters quenched the flames. The stone man howled. He'd been a summer islander before. His jaw and half his cheek had turned to stone, but his skin was black as midnight where it was not grey. Where he had grasped the torch, his skin had cracked and split. Blood was seeping from his knuckles, though he did not seem to feel it. That was some small mercy, Tyrion supposed. Though mortal, Greyscale was supposedly not painful. "Stand aside!" someone shouted, far away, and another voice said, "The prince! Protect the boy!" The stone man staggered forward, his hands outstretched and grasping. Tyrion drove a shoulder into him. It felt like slamming into a castle wall, but this castle stood upon a shattered leg. The stone man went over backwards, grabbing hold of Tyrion as he fell. They hit the river with a towering splash, and Mother Rhoyne swallowed up the two of them. The sudden cold hit Tyrion like a hammer. As he sank, he felt a stone hand fumbling at his face. Another closed around his arm, dragging him down into darkness. Blind, his nose full of river, choking, sinking, he kicked and twisted and fought to pry the clutching fingers off his arm. But the stone fingers were unyielding. Air bubbled from his lips. The world was black and growing blacker. He could not breathe. There are worse ways to die than drowning. And if truth be told, he had perished long ago, back in King's Landing. It was only his revenant who remained, the small, vengeful ghost, who throttled Shay and put a crossbow bolt through the great Lord Tywin's bowels. No man would mourn the thing that he'd become. "I'll haunt the Seven Kingdoms," he thought, sinking deeper. "They would not love me living, so let them dread me dead." When he opened his mouth to curse them all, black water filled his lungs, and the dark closed in around him.
Arya. When she climbed all the way to the highest branch, Arya could see chimneys poking through the trees. Thatched roofs clustered along the shore of the lake, and the small stream that emptied into it, and a wooden pier jutted out into the water beside a low, long building with a slate roof. She skinned farther out, until the branch began to sag under her weight. No boats were tied to the pier, but she could see thin tendrils of smoke rising from some of the chimneys, and part of a wagon jutting out behind a stable. Someone's there. Arya chewed her lip. All the other places they'd come upon had been empty and desolate. Farms, villages, castles, septs, barns, it made no matter. If it could burn, the Lannisters had burned it. If it could die, they'd killed it. They had even set the woods ablaze where they could, though the leaves were still green and wet from recent rains, and the fires had not spread. "They would have burned the lake, if they could have," Gendry had said, and Arya knew he was right. On the night of their escape, the flames of the burning town had shimmered so brightly on the water that it had seemed that the lake was afire. When they finally summoned the nerve to steal back into the ruins the next night, nothing remained but blackened stones, the hollow shells of houses, and corpses. In some places, wisps of pale smoke still rose from the ashes. Hot Pie had pleaded with them not to go back, and Lommy called them fools and swore that Sir Aemery would catch them and kill them too. But Lorch and his men had long gone by the time they reached the Holdfast. They found the gates broken down, the walls partly demolished, and the inside strewn with the unburied dead. One look was enough for Gentry. "They're killed, everyone," he said. "And dogs have been at them too, look." "Or wolves?" "Dogs, wolves, it makes no matter. It's done here." But Arya would not leave until they found Yorin.
They couldn't have killed him, she told herself. He was too hard and tough, and a brother of the Night's Watch besides. She said as much to Gendry as they searched among the corpses. The axe blow that had killed him had split his skull apart, but the great tangled beard could be no one else's, or the garb, patched and unwashed, and so faded it was more grey than black. Sir Aimery Lorch had given no more thought to burying his own dead than to those he had murdered, and the corpses of four Lannister men-at-arms were heaped near Yoren's. Arya wondered how many it had taken to bring him down. "He was going to take me home," she thought, as they dug the old man's hole. There were too many dead to bury them all, but Yoren at least must have a grave. Arya had insisted. "He was going to bring me safe to Winterfell. He promised." Part of her wanted to cry. The other part wanted to kick him. It was Gendry who thought of the Lord's Tower House and the three that Yoren had sent to hold it. They had come under attack as well, but the Round Tower had only one entry, a second-story door reached by a ladder. Once that had been pulled inside, Sir Aimery's men could not get at them. The Lannisters had piled brush against the tower's base and set it afire, but the stone would not burn, and Lorch did not have the patience to starve them out. Cutjack opened the door at Gendry's shout, and when Kurt said they'd be better pressing on north and going back, Arya had clung to the hope that she might still reach Winterfell. Well, this village was no Winterfell, but those thatched roofs promised warmth and shelter, and maybe even food, if they were bold enough to risk them. Unless it's Lorch there. He had horses. He would have travelled faster than us. She watched from the tree for a long time, hoping she might see something, a man, a horse, a banner, anything that would help her know. A few times she glimpsed motion, but the buildings were so far off, it was hard to be certain. Once, very clearly, she heard the whinny of a horse. The air was full of birds, crows mostly. From afar, they were no larger than flies as they wheeled and flapped above the thatched roofs. To the east, God's eye was a sheet of sun-hammered blue that filled half the world. Some day, as they made their slow way up the muddy shore, Gendry wanted no part of any roads, and even Hot Pie and Lomir saw the sense in that. Arya felt as though the lake was calling her. She wanted to leap into those placid blue waters, to feel clean again, to swim and splash and bask in the sun. But she dare not take off her clothes where the others could see, not even to wash them. At the end of the day, she would often sit on a rock and dangle her feet in the cool water. She had finally thrown away her cracked and rotted shoes. Walking barefoot was hard at first, but the blisters had finally broken, the cuts had healed, and her soles had turned to leather. The mud was nice between her toes, and she liked to feel the earth underfoot when she walked. From up here, she could see a small wooded island off to the northeast. 30 yards from shore, three black swans were gliding over the water, so serene. No one had told them that war had come, and they cared nothing for burning towns and butchered men. She stared at them with yearning. Part of her wanted to be a swan. The other part wanted to eat one. She had broken her fast on some acorn paste and a handful of bugs. Bugs weren't so bad when you got used to them. Worms were worse, but still not as bad as the pain in your belly after days without food. Finding bugs was easy. All you had to do was kick over a rock. Arya had eaten a bug once when she was little, just to make Sansa screech, so she hadn't been afraid to eat another. Weasel wasn't either, but Hot Pie retched up the beetle he tried to swallow, and Lummy and Gendry wouldn't even try. Yesterday, Gendry had caught a frog and shared it with Lummy, and a few days before, Hot Pie had found blackberries and stripped the bush bare, but mostly they had been living on water and acorns. Kurtz had told them how to use rocks and make a kind of acorn paste. It tasted awful. She wished the poacher hadn't died. He'd known more about the woods than all the rest of them together. But he'd taken an arrow through the shoulder, pulling in the ladder at the tower house. Tarba had packed it with mud and moss from the lake, and for a day or two Kurt swore the wound was nothing, even though the flesh of his throat was turning dark, while angry red welts crept up his jaw and down his chest. Then one morning he couldn't find the strength to get up, and by the next he was dead. They buried him under a mound of stones, and Cut Jack had claimed his sword and hunting horn, while Tarba helped himself to bow and boots and knife. They'd taken it all when they left. At first they thought the two had just gone hunting, that they'd soon return with game and feed them all, but they waited and waited until finally Gendry made them move on. Maybe Tarba and Cut Jack figured they would stand a better chance without a gaggle of orphan boys to herd along. They probably would, too, but that didn't stop her hating them for leaving. Beneath the tree, Hot Pie barked like a dog. Kurtz had told them to use animal sounds to signal to each other. An old poacher's trick, he'd said, but he died before he could teach them how to make the sounds right. Hot Pie's bird calls were awful. His dog was better, but not much. Arya hopped from the high branch to one beneath it, her hands out for balance. A water dancer never falls. Lightfoot, her toes curled tight around the branch, she walked a few feet, hopped down to a larger limb, then swung hand over hand through the tangle of leaves until she reached the trunk. The bark was rough beneath her fingers, against her toes. She descended quickly, jumping down the final 6 feet, rolling when she landed. Gendry gave her a hand to pull her up.
"You were up there a long time. What could you see?"
"A fishing village, just a little place, north along the shore. 26 thatch roofs and one slate," I counted. "I saw a part of a wagon. Someone's there." At the sound of her voice, Weasel came creeping out from the bushes. Lommy had named her that. He said she looked like a weasel, which wasn't true, but they couldn't keep on calling her the crying girl after she'd finally stopped crying. Her mouth was filthy. Arya hoped she hadn't been eating mud again.
"Did you see people?" asked Gendry.
"Mostly just roofs," Arya admitted. "But some chimneys were smoking, and I heard a horse." The weasel put her arms around her leg, clutching tight. Sometimes she did that now.
"If there's people, there's food," Hot Pie said too loudly.
Gendry was always telling him to be more quiet, but it never did any good.
"Might be they'll give us some."
"Might be they'll kill us too," Gendry said.
"Not if we yielded,"
Hot Pie said hopefully.
"Now, you sound like Lummy."
Lummy Greenhands sat propped up between two thick roots at the foot of an oak tree. A spear had taken him through his left calf during the fight at the Holdfast. By the end of the next day, he had to limp along one-legged with an arm around Gendry, and now he couldn't even do that. They hacked branches off trees to make a litter for him, but it was slow, hard work carrying him along, and he whimpered every time they jounced him.
"We have to yield," he said. "That's what Yoren should have done. He should have opened the gates like they said."
Arya was sick of Lommy going on about how Yoren should have yielded. It was all he talked about when they carried him, that and his leg and his empty belly. Hot Pie agreed.
"They told Yoren to open the gates. They told him in the king's name. You have to do what they tell you in the king's name. It was that stinky old man's fault. If he'd have yielded, they would have left us be." Gendry frowned. Knights and lordlings, they take each other captive and pay ransoms, but they don't care if the likes of you yield or not. He turned to Arya. What else did you see? If it's a fishing village, they'd sell us fish, I bet, said Hot Pie. The lake teemed with fresh fish, but they had nothing to catch them with. Arya had tried to use her hands, the way she had seen Cuss do, but fish were quicker than pigeons, and the water played tricks on her eyes. I don't know about fish. Arya tugged at the weasel's matted hair, thinking it might be best to hack it off. There's crows down by the water. Something's dead there. Fish washed up on shore, Hot Pie said. If the crows eat it, I bet we could. We shall catch some crows. We could eat them, said Lummy. We could make a fire and roast them like chickens. Gendry looked fierce when he scowled. His beard had grown in, thick and black as briar. I said no fires. Lummy's hungry, Hot Pie whined, and I am too. We're all hungry, said Arya. You're not, Lummy spat from the ground. Worm breath. Arya could have kicked him in his wound. I said I'd dig worms for you too if you wanted. Lummy made a disgusted face. If it wasn't for my leg, I'd hunt us some boars. Some boars, she mocked. You need a boar spear to hunt boars, and horses and dogs, and men to flush the boar from its lair. Her father had hunted boar in the Wolfswood with Rob and John. Once he even took Bran, but never Arya, even though she was older. Septa Mordain said boar hunting was not for ladies, and Mother only promised that when she was older she might have her own hawk. She was older now, but if she had a hawk, she'd eat it. What do you know about hunting boars? Said Hot Pie. More than you. Gendry was in no mood to hear it. Quiet, both of you. I need to think what to do. He always looked pained when he tried to think, like it hurt him something fierce. Yield, Lummy said. I told you to shut up about the yielding. We don't even know who's in there. Maybe we can steal some food. Lummy could steal, if it wasn't for his leg, said Hot Pie. He was a thief in the city. A bad thief, Arya said, or he wouldn't have got caught. Gendry squinted up at the sun. Even fall will be the best time to sneak in. I'll go scout come dark. No, I'll go, Arya said. You're too noisy. Gendry got that look on his face. We'll both go. Arya should go, Lummy said. He's sneakier than you are. We'll both go, I said. But what if you don't come back? Hot Pie can't carry me by himself. You know he can't. And there's wolves, Hot Pie said. I heard them last night. When I had the watch, they sounded close. Arya had heard them too. She'd been asleep in the branches of an elm, but the howling had woken her. She'd sat awake for a good hour, listening to them, prickles creeping up her spine. And you won't even let us have a fire to keep them off, Hot Pie said. It's not right, leaving us for the wolves. No one is leaving you, Gendry said in disgust. Lummy has his spear if the wolves come, and you'll be with him. We're just going to go see, that's all. We're coming back. Whoever it is, you should yield to them, Lummy whined. I need some potion for my leg. It hurts bad. If we see any leg potion, we'll bring it, Gendry said. Arya, let's go. I want to get near before the sun is down. Hot Pie, you keep Weasel here. I don't want her following. Last time she kicked me. I'll kick you if you don't keep her here. Without waiting for an answer, Gendry donned his steel helm and walked off. Arya had to scamper to keep up.
Gendry was 5 years older and a foot taller than she was, and long of leg as well. For a while he said nothing, just ploughed on through the trees with an angry look on his face, making too much noise. But finally he stopped and said, "I think Lummy's going to die." She was not surprised. Kurtz had died of his wound, and he'd been a lot stronger than Lummy. Whenever it was Arya's turn to help carry him, she could feel how warm his skin was and smell the stink of his leg. "Maybe we could find a maester."
"You'll only find maesters in castles, and even if we found one, he wouldn't dirt his hands on the likes of Lummy."
Gendry ducked under a low-hanging limb.
"That's not true.
Maester Lewin would have helped anyone who came to him, she was certain.
He's going to die, and the sooner he does it, the better for the rest of us. We should just leave him, like he says. If it was you or me hurt, you know he'd leave us."
They scrambled down a steep cut and up the other side, using roots for handholds.
"I'm sick of carrying him, and I'm sick of all his talk about yielding, too. If he could stand up, I'd knock his teeth in. Lummy's no use to anyone. That crying girl's no use either."
"You leave Weasel alone. She's just scared and hungry, that's all." Arya glanced back, but the girl was not following for once. Hot Pie must have grabbed her, like Gendry had told him.
"She's no use," Gendry repeated stubbornly. "Her and Hot Pie and Lummy, they're slowing us down, and they're gonna get us killed. You're the only one of the bunch who's good for anything, even if you are a girl."
Arya froze in her steps. "I'm not a girl."
"Yes, you are. Do you think I'm as stupid as they are?"
"No, you're stupider. The Night's Watch doesn't take girls. Everyone knows that."
"That's true. I don't know why Yorin brought you, but he must have had some reason. You're still a girl."
"I am not."
"Then pull out your cock and take a piss. Go on."
"I don't need to take a piss. If I wanted to, I could."
"Liar. You can't take out your cock because you don't have one. I never noticed before when there were 30 of us, but you always go off in the woods to make your water. You don't see Hot Pie doing that, nor me, neither. If you're not a girl, you must be some eunuch."
"You're the eunuch."
"You know I'm not." Gendry smiled. "You want me to take out my cock and prove it? I don't have anything to hide."
"Yes, you do," Arya blurted, desperate to escape the subject of the cock she didn't have. "Those gold cloaks were after you at the inn, and you won't tell us why."
"I wish I knew. I think Yoren knew, but he never told me. Why do you think they were after you, though?"
Arya bit her lip. She remembered what Yoren had said the day he had hacked off her hair.
"This lot, half of them, will turn you over to the Queen quick as spit for a pardon, and maybe a few silvers. The other half will do the same, only they'd rape you first."
Only Gendry was different. The Queen wanted him too. "I'll tell you, if you tell me," she said wearily.
"I would if I knew, Harry. Is that really what you're called, or do you have some girl's name?"
Arya glared at the gnarled root by her feet. She realized that the pretense was done. Gendry knew, and she had nothing in her pants to convince him otherwise. She could draw a needle and kill him where he stood, or else trust him. She wasn't certain she'd be able to kill him, even if she tried. He had his own sword, and he was a lot stronger. All that was left was the truth. "Lummy and Hot Pie can't know," she said.
"They won't," he swore. "Not from me."
"Arya," she raised her eyes to his. My name is Arya, of House Stark.
Of House? It took him a moment before he said, The King's Hand was named Stark, the one they killed for a traitor.
He was never a traitor. He was my father. Gendry's eyes widened.
So that's why you thought...
She nodded. Yoren was taking me home, to Winterfell.
You're highborn, then. You'll be a lady.
Arya looked down at her ragged clothes and bare feet, all cracked and calloused. She saw the dirt under her nails, the scabs on her elbows, the scratches on her hands. Septa Mordane wouldn't even know me, I bet. Sansa might, but she'd pretend not to. My mother's a lady and my sister, but I never was.
Yes, you were. You were a lord's daughter, and you lived in a castle, didn't you? And you... God be good, I never...
All of a sudden, Gendry seemed uncertain, almost afraid.
All that about cocks, I never should have said that. And I've been pissing in front of you and everything. I beg your pardon, my lady.
Stop that, Arya hissed. Was he mocking her?
I know my courtesies, my lady,
Gendry said, stubborn as ever.
Whenever high-born girls come into the shop with their fathers, my master told me I was to bend the knee and speak only when they spoke to me, and call them milady.
If you start calling me milady, even Hot Pie is going to notice. And you better keep on pissing the same way, too.
As my lady commands.
Arya slammed his chest with both hands. He tripped over a stone and sat down with a thump.
What kind of lord's daughter are you?
He said, laughing. This kind. She kicked him in the side, but it only made him laugh harder. You laugh all you like. I'm going to see who's in the village. The sun had already fallen below the trees. Dusk would be on them in no time at all. For once it was Gendry who had to hurry after. You smell that? She asked. He sniffed the air.
Rotten fish.
You know it's not.
We'd better be careful. I'll go around west, see if there's some road. There must be, if you saw a wagon. You take the shore. If you need help, bark like a dog.
That's stupid. If I need help, I'll shout, help. She darted away, bare feet silent in the grass. When she glanced back over her shoulder, he was watching her, with that pained look on his face that meant he was thinking.
He's probably thinking that he shouldn't be letting Milady go stealing food.
Arya just knew he was going to be stupid now. The smell grew stronger as she got closer to the village. It did not smell like rotten fish to her. The stench was ranker, fouler. She wrinkled her nose. Where the trees began to thin, she used the undergrowth, slipping from bush to bush, quiet as a shadow. Every few yards, she stopped to listen. The third time, she heard horses, and a man's voice as well, and the smell got worse.
Dead man stink, that's what it is.
She had smelled it before, with Yoren and the others. A dense thicket of brambles grew south of the village. By the time she reached it, the long shadows of sunset had begun to fade, and the lantern bugs were coming out. She could see thatched roofs just beyond the hedge. She crept along until she found a gap and squirmed through on her belly, keeping well hidden until she saw what made the smell. Beside the lapping waters of God's Eye, a long gibbet of raw green wood had been thrown up, and things that had once been men dangled there, their feet in chains, while crows pecked at their flesh and flapped from corpse to corpse. For every crow, there were 100 flies. When the wind blew off the lake, the nearest corpse twisted on its chain ever so slightly. The crow